everyone, and welcome to the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. It is Monday, March 24, 2003. At this time, I'm going to open up a public hearing, and we're going to go to an agency overview. We're going to open as a subcommittee of the subcommittee, and we will be hearing from Susie Jordan, Legislative Fiscal Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. You have in front of you a small packet of information with ODOT. Not the notebooks.
I thought this is small. My Lord, what's coming?
Those are packets. Those are notebooks.
All right.
Okay, that's what I'm going to be speaking from this morning to start with. I'm just going to give you an overview of the agency's budget, and then we'll get into the department's presentation. The 2003-05 governor's recommended budget is $2.1 billion total funds, $2,174 billion, excuse me, and of that, $44,715,000 is general fund and lottery fund combined, and the agency has budgeted or is projecting 4,686.26 FTE. If you turn the page, I'm not going to go over their mission because the department can explain that. On page 2, at the top of the page, is a pie chart just showing their sources of funds. Other funds supports 95% of the department's budget, and out of the other funds is I think roughly $586 million in federal funds that come in as other. So that's combined in their other funds pie there. The bottom bar chart shows the general funds in the agency's budget, primarily for rail and transit. The reduction in 2003-05 has to do with special session reductions, and we did some shifting of rail and transit programs to the transportation operating fund, and along with some of the smaller general fund matching monies that we had in there, we've completely removed those general funds and replaced those with their transportation operating fund. On page 3, the bar chart shows the federal revenue and federal revenues as other, and the increase in federal funds is primarily due to increases in federal participation for rail, transit, motor carrier transportation. Increase in federal recorded as other funds is due to the highway transportation project construction. And the bar chart on the bottom of page 3 are the other funds. Primarily, the increase there is primarily due to the infusion of highway revenue bonds in the last biennium. On page 4 is the lottery funds portion of their budget. This is all debt service, and the increase in 2003-05 is due to the selling of lottery-backed bonds for the Washington County commuter rail in Washington County, a subject that you'll be talking about during the public hearings over the next 3 weeks. At the bottom of page 4 shows their revenues. They increased between 93, which is at their lowest revenue, results from increased fuel consumption, primarily not an increase in fuel taxes because it has not been increased since 1993. The increase between 1995 and 2005 reflects the infusion of highway revenue bond proceeds for projects. So you can see other funds, federal funds, this is their total revenue picture here. And on page 5 is just a bar chart showing the programs of the department, and what you're supposed to get out of this is that most of the department's budget is highway programs. That's the construction and maintenance for the highway, and then their other programs are the smaller piece of the pie. And then the bar chart at the bottom is the breakdown of what the programs are for the highway programs, preservation, maintenance, and modernization being the primary focus for the department, but also bridge and local government are up in there too. And then, as I read their proposed budget, the budget and policy issues that I think that you will be dealing with during this these public hearings are on the top of page 6, the reduced buying power, meaning that inflation is increasing and our revenues are not increasing. So therefore, the inflation is outpacing their ability to put the same amount of pavement on the road. Reductions in motor carrier and DMV to fund highway projects. Those are two areas that provide services, fee for services. They collect the licenses and they do that, but they're reducing those. The Transportation Commission has made a conscious decision to reduce other areas in order to focus their resources on construction projects, and as a result, these are two areas that have taken some pretty large reductions, as well as central services. But I'm not as concerned about central services. Bridge repair and replacement requirements are an ongoing problem, and it's getting worse. And sustaining support for intercity passenger rail and bus service is also an important aspect of this budget. The Oregon Transportation Investment Act, you'll be looking at the infusion of a large amount of bond money and projects that are some are under construction, some are going to be under construction. This will be occurring over the next two biennia or more. And fee increases versus fuel tax. That's not in this budget, but that is being talked about around the Capitol building, and that does affect the budget, so you need to be aware that that's out there. And then the next attachment you have is a summary of their budget notes from last biennium. They had 17 budget notes and the disposition of each of those budget notes. They have complied with all of their budget notes, either by providing a report or there are a couple of them that are attached that they will be presenting as they present the program area that they were directed to provide the Ways and Means Committee during their budget hearings. So I'm not going to go through every one of those. I'll leave that for your evening reading. Not that you don't have anything else to do, but that. And that's so the attachments there, the next couple attachments are the reports that they are required to discuss during their budget hearing. The next handout is a summary of their policy packages and reduction items. And then the first three pages are additions in their budget. And it's lengthy because they're spread out across several program areas. And so one policy package may cover 5 or 6 different program areas. And so I've listed them separately. And then the last two pages are areas where they're not recommending any more reductions, but the 10% requirement for that they're required to put in their budget for where they would reduce are the last two pages.
Is that under, Mr. Chair, under any description remaining reductions?
That's correct. And then attaches my analysis, which you got in advance. Hopefully you've had a chance to read that. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those. And then finally, what I have attached are just the summaries of the audit reports that occurred during the biennium for your information. And if you want to get more detailed information, the website is printed at the bottom where you can download the full report if you desire. Now, the last thing that I wanted to talk about was just the calendar. I sent you each a copy of the next 3 weeks, what we're hoping to cover each day. And the only thing that I wanted to point out to you is that this week on Wednesday is public testimony and it's Senior Disabled Transportation Day. We'll be meeting in Hearing Room F that day, and there will be an overflow room, which is the orientation room down at the by the rotunda. So on the other thing that the folks have asked is if you could stick around for a little while longer after your normal hearing time, because there are many disabled people and it takes them some time to get through what they want to say. So if you could stay until 10:45 instead of your... I'm not sure what time you usually leave, 10 or 10:30. But
we try to get out of here by 10:30. Now, sometimes we're past that. But
okay.
We start
so they're asking for a few minutes longer is all I wanted to ask.
Do you think
if you can do that.
Do we need to think about actually beginning at 8 o'clock?
Well, if, that's up to you. We could do that, I think.
Let's talk about that. Maybe we can get everyone in somewhere.
Okay.
Is Lori going to be next?
Lori is next.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Has the director been notified that each day of hearings is $10 million out of his budget?
As long as it goes into roads and streets.
Good morning, Chair George, members of the subcommittee. For the record, I'm Lori Byerly from the Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management, and I'm the analyst assigned to the Department of Transportation. In front of you should be a somewhat familiar-looking packet. It looks like this. They all look the same from us. So, if you'll turn to page 2, I'm going to go over real briefly at a very high level, agency overview level, what's in the governor's budget. Much of it's the same information that Susie just went over, so it should be starting to get kind of familiar, and hopefully by the time 3 weeks are up, we'll all be on the same page as far as what's in there for right now. You'll notice that the 2003-05 governor's budget for the department is about $2.2 billion, and this is about a 15% increase from the department's budget through the 2001-03 fifth special session. Special session actions for the department did decrease the department's general fund. Most of those dollars were backfilled, as Susie mentioned, by dollars from the transportation operating fund. If you go to page 3, you'll see that the department's budget, how it looks between funding sources, the funding types. Other funds is predominantly the largest portion of their funding resources. And a large portion of this does come from federal dollars. The department receives those as federal as other. And you'll see some other funds non-limited. Those non-limited funds are used primarily for internal operating funds as well as some debt service. The department's general fund, as of governor's budget, is down to just over $12 million. Page 4. What's in the governor's budget for 2003-05? Like I said, it's a 15% increase from the 2001-03 budget through fifth special session. That's about $282 million more than the budget in 2001-03. The budget prioritizes program needs and reallocates resources to support these priorities. As Susie mentioned, the department did reallocate across some of the programs. Driver motor vehicle services and motor carrier were two areas where there are some reductions in expenditures for 2003-05. Some of those dollars were shifted to work for other highway programs to support projects. As far as those two divisions go, their core services are continued, but there may be some service impacts due to those decreased revenues and expenditures for those programs. The budget also maximizes the use of other funds to offset general fund reductions. Like I said, some transportation operating fund dollars were used to backfill general fund cuts. The budget focuses on alleviating the state's significant bridge problem. There's about estimated about 350 bridges statewide that are nearing the end of their planned use period. The estimate for statewide repair or deficient bridges is about $4.7 billion, and this budget does attempt to start addressing some of those problems. It's a continuation of work that was started last biennium when many of those bridge problems became very significant and obvious. The budget also increases support for and reliance on innovative contracting and local governments to help deliver projects. The department's working very hard to streamline its contracting process, get budgets or get projects out as soon as possible and completed in a short time frame. In order to do that, it has had to change how it conducts some of its contracting operations, and we'll give you more detail about the kind of changes it's made. Page 5. This is the exact opposite of Susie's graph. It shows you how the expenditures are. You'll see that 72% of the department's budget is in the highway program area, and off to the right, you'll see how that percentage falls among the different programs in the highway. You'll see, like Susie said, that maintenance and preservation and bridge are the top chunks of those operating project dollars. General fund in the budget is within rail and public transit programs. The remainder of that is mostly other funds, resources that are being spent. If you go to page 6, this will show you how the department spends its money by budget category. Over half of the budget is in services and supply dollars. These would include expenditures for contracting, professional services that go out and assist on projects. Personal services is about just under 30% of the budget. These would be employees directly located within the department. Special payments go out to public transit and rail projects. Debt service is on lottery bonds as well as highway revenue bonds the department has issued to support highway construction projects. On page 7, this is a little bit of a snapshot to show you how the 2003-05 governor's budget was developed. We started with the department's 2001-03 legislatively adopted budget, which was about $1.8 billion total funds. Included some actions that occurred over the course of the 2001-03 biennium. These were legislatively approved actions, including both emergency boards and special sessions, session actions through April 2002. The impact of these changes increased the department's budget by about $1.3 million total funds. The department did appear before the emergency board a few times, and I have not detailed all those visits here, but a couple of the primary changes that occurred was that the department took $1.5 million general fund in reductions for the rail, public transit, and transportation safety programs as a result of special session actions. And the department did receive, at the beginning of the biennium, $2 million other funds for driver and motor vehicles information technology projects. The department had been requested to return to the E-Board to receive limitation for those projects as a result of discussions during the 2001 regular session. The budget also includes some base budget adjustments. We've rolled up some 2001-03 position actions and compensation changes. The governor's budget statewide did reduce merit increases and some percentage cost of living increases for managers statewide. Those actions are not reflected yet within the department's budget. Those will need to be adjusted as we move forward with the agency's budget. On page 8, continuing on with what we call essential packages, which makes adjustments to the department's base expenditures. Package 010 makes adjustments for things like temporary appointments, differentials, and overtime payments. This was partially offset by a little over $300,000 in vacancy savings, which we did capture as part of the budget development process. Package 020, or program adjustments, these are rather significant from the department. Other agency budgets you might see won't have as much as high amount of dollars reflected in this category. What we usually do for the Department of Transportation is because as it works on highway construction projects, there's a lot of variability in how those projects are paid out. We use this package to make adjustments for planned payouts on those projects. So a big portion of the $35 million in this package relates to how over time we anticipate those projects to be paid out in the 03-05 biennium. Sometimes payments are actually being shifted from 0103 to 0305 or maybe even pulled back based on the department's transportation project plan. This package also includes a phase-in for South Metro Commuter Rail. This was a two-part piece of legislation that gave the department lottery funds in two different pieces, one piece in 0103 and one piece in 0305, that would allow construction of the South Metro Commuter Rail project to Wilsonville. This phased in $15 million in expenditures for the 0305 piece of that project based on the 2001 legislation. I believe there will be some adjustments to this made because the 2001-03 piece of the project has been kind of pushed off, so we're going to see a bigger chunk of that occurring in 2003-05, and I believe that will be part of the detailed discussion we have later during the department's budget. Package 030 includes inflation and price list adjustments for state government service charges. There will likely be some adjustments within this component of the budget as we look at inflation and look at the charges paid to other state agencies such as the Department of Justice and the Department of Administrative Services. Package 050 includes a fund shift in transportation safety. They were receiving federal funds directly, but this does shift it to other funds based on availability of revenues. The package itself has a net zero impact, but we do see a shift between revenue fund types and expenditure fund types. Page 9. The governor's budget for the department does include a total of 31 policy packages. These include policy packages related to special session actions, which have some reductions in them, as well as packages which support department initiatives in highway project construction, as well as other areas of the department. Packages in total are about $162.6 million total funds. This includes a $7.3 million reduction in general fund. This figure reflects only the policy package impact of general fund reductions. If you were to look at department overall, you'll see a drop of about $5.2 million between 2001-03 and 2003-05. The reason the reduction isn't quite as much is because as part of budget development, inflation and roll-up of personal services costs, at the same time we cut general fund, there were also some increases in general fund that kind of offsets that. Other policy packages also include a $38 million reduction in other funds based on highway revenue projections. This has to do with looking at the highway revenue estimates and making some shifts between areas like driver motor vehicles and motor carrier and shifting some of those revenues and expenditures into the highway construction programs. The budget also includes $186 million other funds package for highway construction projects. This relates directly to the influx of revenue bonds that Susie mentioned in her presentation. This comes from the Oregon Transportation Investment Act, and this reflects the dollars anticipated to be paid out on construction projects and contracts for the 03-05 biennium, or the increase, rather. There's already some amount in the department's base budget. Other policy packages total about $5.3 million other funds, and these include packages supporting access management, bridge permitting, transportation systems maintenance, contract delivery. Like I mentioned earlier, the department is exploring some new ways of delivering contracts, local government projects, transportation engineering, construction of a maintenance building, and some enhancements in the area of trying to work on fuels tax auditing in order to ensure that everyone's in compliance. Page 10. The governor's budget does include some fee or revenue changes. The department does have the authority through statute to set some fees by administrative rule and has exercised this ability over the course of the 2001-03 biennium. House Bill 5057 allows the legislature to ratify these fees that were adopted during 2001-03. These fees include revenues in utility permits, outdoor advertising, and international fuel tax agreement participants. And we'll take a look at these fees as part of that bill later on. Since the time of budget development, the department has continued to look at its ongoing budget needs and issues, and as a result of that has identified some additional technical and policy changes it would like to make to the budget and has been working with the governor's office to look at those items. These adjustments are supported by the governor's office, and that list has been sent to the legislative fiscal office review and analysis, and as we work through the program areas, we can discuss where these changes would be appropriate and have an opportunity to look at those in more detail. That includes my presentation. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Representative Krieger. Just a couple little things. Second page over, lottery funds, general funds are both 1%. There's two figures are more than doubles. It's just that it's such a small amount compared to the whole. You just make it 1% and round it off.
Yes, Representative Krieger.
And then a couple pages over, maintenance 14%, preservation 14%. Kind of what's the difference? I understand what maintenance is preservation.
Chair George, Representative Krieger, the department could give you a much better explanation of the difference in those programs. Preservation is mainly working on asphalt, keeping it in good shape. Maintenance is a variety of different projects, working on other aspects of highway construction.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you. Just back to your original document. I think the comma should have been a dollar.
Yeah. I noticed that, too.
It's
million, not billion. Yeah.
Million, not billion. That would be putting it into the trillion, I think. ODOT would love that.
We could build some bridges.
Yeah. One question I do have, state government service charge is a $28 million increase. Some other budgets that we have reviewed, those increases have been put into suspense. I'm looking at page 8. that strikes me as being quite a healthy increase for internal transfer charges.
Chair George, Senator Morse. There's a couple of different components here. One is standard inflation on typical expenditures, which is typically averages about 3.5%. The other piece, which is state government service charges, this is a large agency. Typically, those costs that are paid to Department of Administrative Services, Justice, and other entities are based on either an FTE type of situation. It's based on the number of employees within the department. It's how those costs are built. Or it could be based on a percentage of a certain type of expenditure. Sometimes it's dependent on the agency's mission and what they do for work. For example, risk management is based on actual anticipated costs of supporting insurance for that for the department's programs. So there's a mix of things in here. I would say primarily it's bigger because they're bigger, but we could provide some more detail on how those things are costed out and what the basis.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, like other agencies, their liability insurance costs have gone up considerably, and workers' comp costs. So that's probably a large chunk of that increase. And I can find out real quick in a second here what that is. That is off the top of your head, Deborah? Well, I'll get that to you. I don't want to spend too much time looking for it, but it's here.
Any additional questions for Lynn? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
At this time, we're going to ask Bruce Warner, Director, and Michael Morris, Executive Deputy Director. That sounds more important. And we also have a state court.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. A pleasure to be here. For the record, I'm Bruce Warner. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. And on my left and your right is the chairman of our Transportation Commission, Steve Corey. And we're going to do a little tag team here on the overview presentation for you today to just set the stage for what you're going to hear over the next few days from my division administrators, where the work of the department is really accomplished and done. I believe you have a smaller document in front of you, which is entitled the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Transportation Economic Development presentation document. And so you can refer to this. I'm not going to go through it word by word, but I'll give you some of the highlights of that. And again, there isn't the very first section is the overview, which I'm going to discuss very briefly. Thank you, Ms. Jordan, Ms. Byerly, for the presentation. They did a good job of outlining the issues. What I wanted to do is very quickly make the committee aware on page one is ODOT's mission. And if you're not aware of it, it's to provide a safe, efficient transportation system that supports economic opportunity and livable communities for Oregonians. And I think this budget and other things that you're going to hear in the next few days show that economic opportunity and a healthy transportation system are undeniably linked. I think all of you know transportation moves the economy. It connects markets, moves goods, gets people to work and other pursuits. And the other thing I think is becoming really important in terms of the state of the economy of Oregon is that $1 million of highway and transportation construction relates to 19 family wage jobs during the time of that construction project. And I think those are actually conservative numbers when you look at it. The next two pages, we're starting to talk about the strategic direction. You heard a little bit about it, where we are really trying to change the way we do business. This is at the bottom of page one, if you first look there, where we're working on streamlining processes to shorten project delivery time, which I think everybody wants. We're using innovative contracting more and more. We're using more and more outside consultants. We're involving our area commissions on transportation and citizens in ways we never have before, and Mr. Foria will talk about some of those.
Senator Carter.
I just want, when you get to terminology like innovative contracting, I'd like to have some specificity of that.
Mr. Chair.
You can wait till you get there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, we will. You'll hear from John Rosenberger, the division administrator, talk to you about many of the things we're doing that are innovative in terms of contracting. I can answer some of those, but for you in a very high level. But essentially, it's getting beyond the normal design, bid, and build process, where you essentially turn over projects, as an example, to a team of private consultants and contractors to design and build a project from the very beginning. Or you use other things to take a look at not only the cost of the project, but the time it takes to deliver a project, and you figure out what's the best team or a contractor to select to make sure you get the project done as quickly as possible. We can go over that more.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the reason I was asking a question, we passed some legislation on this piece, especially the architectural people did it. And I just want to make sure our agencies are very careful, because when they go in to doing innovative contracting, right, it leaves small businesses behind too many mm-hmm. times. And it certainly leaves minority businesses behind.
Right.
And so when someone comes with innovative contracting, we need to break that down so that all the people who belong under the tent are there. Because we're talking billions of dollars. And as you heard in our committee before, Oregon is a small business state. Mm-hmm. And unless we can keep our small businesses strong, I like them going out finding other big agencies in other parts of the country and other places to come here and do work. But I prefer that they use Oregon dollars in Oregon to the greatest degree possible. My comments for the day.
Right. Chair Senator Carter, we agree with you, so we'll comment on that some more for you.
Director, let me share with the committee a little bit. Now, you can see I started off looking like this, and there's all kinds of scribbles. Then I ended up looking like this. But the thing I noticed was a lot of the questions that I had here and here were answered further in, so we might want to think about that. We're going to get, as I would say, well, what does that mean? And then I would find out, well, there was an answer to that later.
Okay.
So as we walk through this, I think maybe if we could take notes and stuff, because we're going to come across a lot of the answers as we proceed.
Chair, no wonder they're spending 3 weeks in front of us.
Yeah.
Look at all these.
Yeah. It's only just
Mr. Chairman, if I can continue then, I concur. You will see a lot of the detail and the answers, I suspect, to your question. When we get into each division. What I just want to do is, again, set the stage. I think you've heard some of the challenges that are facing us. We've got hundreds of cracked and deficient bridges. We've got a growing backlog of maintenance and preservation work. And we do lack stable funding for rail and transit programs, which are very important to many throughout the state. And there's a huge demand to deal with growth areas and congestion throughout the state of Oregon. What I wanted to stress, however, is that if you look at page 3 of the overview, you can see our goals and the high level. I'll just hit the bullets. Our goals are, number one, to improve the safety of the highway and transportation system in Oregon. That's one of our number one priorities. The second one is to move people and goods efficiently around the state, through the state, to get the markets. And then also to improve livability and economic prosperity, which, again, that's all part of that. And then finally, because we also provide direct service, like in our driver and motor vehicle services, we want to make sure that we do provide excellent customer service. And that was on page 4, where we talked about those last goals. The committee asked us to talk a lot about performance measures and what we're doing. We take performance measures very seriously at the department. And starting on page 5 and through page 12, you can see that ODOT has 22 key measures as links to the Oregon benchmarks. And let me take just a couple moments to highlight a few of those. And you're going to hear more about our performance measures from the individual division administrators over the next few days. On page 5 is one that I want to call your attention to, and that is safety. The safety of the transportation system is underscored by the measure of the rate of highway fatalities per 100 million miles of vehicles traveled in the state of Oregon. And you can see that our goal for 2010 is to get below the rate of one death per 100 million miles traveled in the state of Oregon. And recent years have been hovering around 1.2 to 1.4 per 100 million miles traveled. And the good news is we actually met our goal, 2005 goal last year, so we're ahead of schedule. But I want to stress to you that this rate equates to 420 people losing their lives in the state of Oregon on Oregon's roads, highways, and streets. and we think that's unacceptable. So one of the things you're going to see throughout this presentation over the next few days is our priority to safety, roadway design, seat belt usage, enforcement of impaired drivers laws, rail crossing improvements, commercial truck inspections, new licensing requirements are among the many of the things that are covered in this budget, and simply put, are there intended to improve the safety of the transportation system. And I think it's important for all of us to note that over the past 3 years, Oregon has enjoyed the least annual traffic fatalities that we've seen since President Eisenhower was in office. So that just gives you an idea of how well we're doing in transportation safety, but we can still do better.
Senator Dukes?
Do we have any way of breaking down to why when numbers go up, when numbers go, well, mostly when numbers go down, we're designing a little differently, not on I-5, I mean, but in other places we're designing a little differently, and we're designing for safety. And we get money from the feds to enforce seat belts, so we do that. Enforcement goes up and down. I mean, when you get numbers, are you able to break them down in any meaningful way and to say, we know that this is a result of doing this or not doing that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, I'll ask Troy Costales to give you some of the breakdowns on this because I think it is important. We know that the use of seat belts, drunk driving, and speed are some of the major factors that are involved. We also, again, know that truck inspections relate to truck at fault accidents. So we have good linkages between the things that we do and the improvements in certain area. There have been a number of improvements, as you point out, in engineering, in enforcement, in emergency response by emergency providers, and the enforcement. And so we work at all of those, and it's a team. That's the important thing. You can't not all, and it's hard to track which the responsibility of what improvements to bring that down. But I think we've been working together, and we can give you a good idea in our budget where our efforts are and the results that have occurred that we think track back to this ultimate measure.
That's fine. I was just wondering, because you do get statistics, and I just wondered if mm-hmm. we were able to break them down that way.
Yeah, we have some good data, and others, okay. it's just gut level how yeah. how it's happening. If you go to page 8 and 9, the other one that we're very concerned about is just mobility of the citizens in the state of Oregon. And mobility of citizens is measured in two major ways for us. We look at annual rides per senior and disabled citizen. That's on page 8, and you can see we've set goals there. And then passenger rail ridership on page 9. And you'll notice that both of these ridership measures are trending upward. And the critical issues that you're going to hear about in the next few days will be in the public transit and rail division budgets. And I do want to acknowledge the legislature for providing additional revenues for both of these programs. And obviously the increases you're seeing could not have been possible without the additional dollars provided for those programs.
First, do these numbers include, though, originating and ending rides, or are we talking about people that are moving through on rail through the state? Do we include them in the totals?
Senator George, I will check on that, but I think it includes both.
Okay. We can get a breakdown on
sure.
that. Because some folks have told me that, you know, what's happening where county people are just going through the state on rail.
That's great.
So I'd like to...
Sure. We have good ridership figures. We can give you that. Continuing on, in terms of page 10, the thing I think most people are concerned about when they think about the Oregon Department of Transportation is the pavement and bridge conditions. And we monitor those closely because that is the largest investment that we have in the transportation system in Oregon. And the rate of ongoing deterioration of our aging roads and bridges does exceed the funds available to maintain them properly. At current funding levels, you'll see that the condition of the pavements is projected to drop from by 4% by 2005 from an 81% fair or better down to 77% fair or better. And I point out that our goal is 78%. That's something that the commission has given us. The other important thing is the percentage of non-deficient bridges is expected to decline by 2% by the year 2005 from 68% to 66%. And with the bridge problem we have, we expect this to go down much more rapidly, probably as we learn more about the bridge system.
I'm sorry, we're about two behind you here.
Senator Morris, will you move over?
I just want to know what it will take. I was looking at the statistics on elderly and transit rides for elderly and disabled, senior disabled stuff. And I know if we would stop holding up the money, it would go a little faster. But our target for 2005, which is an improvement over 2002, so I applaud you for that, is 7 senior and disabled rides a year for the average senior. That's not getting out of house much. And I'm not criticizing you for it. I'm only wanting to know what would it take to get up that up to like 12 so they could go out once a month on the system that we're helping to provide. I know they get out more often than that, but I'm just, since we have taken this on and we've expanded it over the years, just at some point maybe you can bring me down. What would it take?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes.
It's like for every million we get this many rides or something. I don't know.
I do not have that, obviously,
I'm
and
sure
I will make
don't.
Sure that you do get that in the presentation of the public transit. Okay.
Senator.
I'm not asking any questions, I fear, because we've discussed it and laughed about it. But I want to give you guys kudos, because for 2 years now, Mr. Chairman, you'd be very proud to know that the Transportation Department department has done an excellent job of working in North Portland and the St. John's Bridge will be in effect in terms of upgrading it and getting it in shape. And you've done a good, your people have done a good job of working in the community because I worked with them on this issue. So thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, thank you so much for those comments. Continuing on, I think on page 12, the other area which we really monitor closely is customer service and satisfaction. And the two measures, the last two measures are the ones I wanted to highlight for you. And customer satisfaction in driver and motor vehicle services and wait times in the DMV field offices are tracked very, very closely. And this is an example of we seek 85% customer satisfaction and wait times that do not exceed 15 minutes. And I, when Lorna Youngs comes and talks to you, she can tell you about the metrics and the things that they do to make sure that the service level is adequate and that people feel it's satisfactory. Continuing on in terms of performance measures, again, the high-level overview on page 13, the DAS, the Department of Administrative Services Performance Measurement Review Committee, stated the following, and I take this as a compliment, that the performance measures that we have are extremely results-oriented. They also say that these 22 measures are clearly stated, allowing readers and analysts to understand the key areas in which ODOT measures its programs. And I think you'll find out throughout the presentation from each division that we measure and try to measure efficiency, effectiveness, as well as customer satisfaction. And then finally, I think it's not in the materials, but I just wanted to acknowledge some of the good work my department is that every year we work with the University of Oregon and usually piggyback on surveys that are done by other departments or the state agencies as a whole. And these are statistically valid surveys, and the public consistently rates ODOT's performance as high. For example, 82% of the folks surveyed trust ODOT to do what is right to maintain a transportation system. 76.6 rate their feelings about ODOT as very or somewhat positive. And this comes as no surprise to me, but 83% were very satisfied with DMV customer service. And if you want the full breakdown of those, we'd be glad to get those for you because it is interesting reading, and I think it shows that we're perceived very highly. The other thing that's not in your in your small materials, but I understand the analysts have provided in your large packets, is what's behind. Why don't you take the map off there? is what we call the bubble chart. And if you haven't seen this before, this is something that has evolved over years, and we've tried to come up with a good way to outline the sources and uses of funds in a very graphical way so you can take a look and see where various monies go. And some people say, wait a minute, if you look at the top left and the sources of funds, the amount of money coming to Oregon for transportation from state and federal sources is $3.2 billion, and that's correct. But you also look right there that a large chunk, about a third of those monies, are automatically, by law, distributed to cities and counties, and then the other charges are going to other state agencies to pay for the services we want. So what we're talking about today, when you heard to hear the analysts talking about the 2.175 budget, that is our budget that's in the box there. And you can see how it's made up from federal and state resources there in terms of the pie chart in the very top right. And then you can see the various program divisions you're going to hear, what kind of money is going into the individual divisions. And then the one that's always of interest is the highway division, the largest circle, and that's down at the left. So if you want to see, you've seen it now portrayed two or three different ways, but this just shows you where the money goes in the highway division. And then in the bottom right is how the committee reserves an ending balance, which I know is of concern to the chair, because it's $508 million when you add that all up. And I think the chair wants to make sure that money is getting out on the road as quickly as possible, which we do too. What I want to point out, when you look at that ending balance in 2005, about 75% of it is made up of highway STIP projects or OTIA, Oregon Transportation Investment Act projects, which for the most part are committed to contract, but the payout of the contractors, as you know, often they're multi-year contracts, some of these, and I think there's a couple of major projects that we're planning on construction in 05, no, 07, like the Pioneer Mountain to Eddyville project is the track that we're looking at for that. So those monies are usually committed to a contract, but because of payout, they don't go out because, as you know, we construct during the summer in the state of Oregon, so major payout during June, July, August, September, and sometimes October.
Mr. Warner, before you move away from the bubble chart, these numbers, either the $3.235 billion, doesn't include all of the dollars that flow back for transportation-related things. For example, the several hundred million that flows directly back to the main transit, to the large transit providers. Is that correct? Do you have exact number on the? We asked that question about 2 months ago from congressional delegation. As far as I know, haven't received it yet. Is the total amount that actually comes back for the different jurisdictions and the amount they get?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have that at my fingertips, but that's quite easily done, and I can. You're right. These do not include the numbers that go directly to transit districts like TriMet in the Portland area.
Right.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Dukes.
Before you get off into whatever your next thing is, I wanted to take one. Go back to page 11. Fish passage and state culverts. And I don't understand the value and 2002 value. 28.9 and 2005 target is 2.8. I don't understand the terminology.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, that relates to the number of river miles of habitat that have been opened up as a result of removal of an impediment either for upstream spawning salmon or steelhead. And what you see, which is interesting, this number looks like we're going down dramatically, and we are, because what we've done over the past few years has attacked the culverts that provided the most opportunity for habitat restoration. So you see that in 2002, I think we were very close to that 28.9 miles of stream opened up for habitat. We're now getting down to some of the smaller streams and the smaller culverts that don't have as much bang for the buck, quite frankly, but are still important for wildlife, fish and wildlife habitat.
And at some point in the presentation, somebody will bring forward how many culverts then, okay?
You bet. What I'd like to do now, if I could, is transition to the chair of our Transportation Commission. Let him talk to you a little bit about the commission and how we've involved our area commissions on transportations to really help us do a better job.
I noticed that name was at the very top of the Transportation Commission list here, so above the director of it.
above the director. I'd add too, Senator George, that when he spoke of chairs and the $500 million, both you and I share, I think, the same desire that we get as much of this money that we've been provided out onto the asphalt as quickly as we can. And so that's certainly one of our goals. My name is Steve Corey. I have the privilege of serving as the chair of the Oregon Transportation Commission. I think 2 years ago I had the opportunity also to appear as we began this budget. I'm in my third year as the chair and have been on the commission many years, not sure exactly how long now that I think about it. But I appreciate being able to be before your subcommittee and being able to tell you a little bit about the commission and about ODOT. First, I wanted to start by telling you that I actually had the honor of working in selecting our director, Bruce Warner, and when I became the chair, he became the director at the same time, and I think that we're pleased to be back here a little over 2 years later to report to you that we feel that we have an increasingly strong department, that we have a department that is striving to continue to make itself better. I don't think we have a perfect department as yet, but we certainly have made great strides in a number of different areas that I think all of us as citizens can be proud of, and we're not done. We shall continue that as we move into the future. The Transportation Commission, as you know, consists of five individuals. Those individuals are governor-appointed, Senate-confirmed. By statute, one of the members needs to be from east of the Cascade Mountains, and no more than three can be from the same political party. Interestingly, as we were coming over here this morning, I asked about, this is just to demonstrate that politics really have not and don't play a part of our decision-making. I asked Matt Garrett, our chief of staff, what party one of our new appointees actually was in, because I just have assumed that he was in one party and found out he was in the other party, and it really doesn't matter. But the fact is, if you really count even right now, which I can tell you, we have one independent, one Democrat, and three Republicans. But I really can tell you that we really don't even count. Our decisions are not political. We do our very best, as I'll explain in a minute, to solicit not only the advice and recommendations of our stakeholders, including cities and counties, but also through a new procedure that we've instigated through area commissions on transportation to pick up grassroots suggestions for projects and using those to incorporate those into our transportation improvement plan, our STIP, as we call it. The five members that presently serve on the commission are John Russell, who's a business person from Portland, Gail Achterman, who lives in both Portland and in Central Oregon and is by background a environmental and land use attorney who has done some state work, and I think many of you know many of these people that serve. Our member from Southern Oregon, Stuart Foster, is an attorney in Medford and has formerly been the president of the Oregon State Bar Association. And our newest member, Randy Pape from Eugene, is a businessman who has business interests in Central Oregon and in the Eugene area and in the Portland area. And we meet monthly during the session. We're down here. Each of our meetings is in Salem. A normal meeting consists of 2 days, but I think, as I've told the newer members as they've come onto the commission, it would belie our actual responsibilities if I told them this was a two-day-a-month job. It's by no means that. In fact, each of us shares responsibility for liaisoning with our area commissions on transportation. As the position I have, I have a few other obligations that I've undertaken and very much enjoy, but I think it would be very typical that all five of us would spend, we don't really count in days, but I would anticipate 5 days or more per month of only Department of Transportation business. Gail Achterman, for instance, just returned from 2 or 3 days in Washington, D.C. with a stakeholder group from the metro region, meeting with a congressional delegation. Each of us have shared these different trips one at a time to sort of represent our different regions. We have multiple speaking obligations that we do, and we do our best to keep track of our staff and how things are going. And we also, each of us, attend our STIP hearings, which are conducted around the state. So it's both an honor and a responsibility, and I can assure you that the five commission members take their responsibilities very seriously. I wanted to just share with you a little bit what's on the board in terms of showing you our progress on area commissions on transportation. we sought a better method of making certain we were in touch with business interests, cities and counties, and tribal governments and others in our decision making. And the method that we set up, which is not perfect, but is certainly one that we continue to strive and make better, is a method of adopting and chartering, as we call it, area commissions on transportation. With the exception of a couple of areas that are in white on the board, that we have not yet formalized our methods of representation, and I'll speak about those. Each of the other parts of the state has an area commission on transportation, and as I briefly said a minute ago, reviews and gives us input on needs, transportation needs, on transportation policies, and we receive and consider those recommendations prior to making our plans for development. We incorporate what is done in our STIP from the acts, but I think even to show you in a better fashion how the acts interact with the department and with the Transportation Commission, I should share with you our selection of the approximately 171 projects that became the OTIA projects, the transportation improvement projects that were approved in the last legislative session. I'm pleased to say, and you'll get detailed reports on where we are and when we'll have these done and which ones are underway now and which ones are underway in design as you go through the next two or three weeks. But I'm pleased to tell you that before we selected those projects were all discussed with area commissions on transportation. Recommendations were received back, were considered. Public hearings were held based upon those recommendations before we made any decisions. I think the proof of the pudding, in credit to you and to the department and to our commission, is the fact that 171 projects were selected. In this day and age, you know that there are controversies in picking one project over another. But the proof of the pudding, I think, is that we have had no appeals of any of those projects, and in fact, all of them are meshing in, and we intend to have that money out into asphalt and all of those things accomplished in a period of approximately 6 years, and we are well underway as we start into that project. The two areas that are white on the board, I thought I should just comment about. The metro region is an area that we started out by relying upon JPAC as the main advisory body back to our commission, and that's worked pretty well, but not perfectly, honestly. It's worked pretty well for us, but I think not perfectly in actually picking up the grassroots parts, and we saw that a little bit in the ODOT, in the OTIA hearing process. We saw, I don't want to use too much in specific examples, but I think that there were some cities, I'll take one as Wilsonville with a new interchange on I-5, that honestly had some feelings that they were sort of in between two counties and were getting caught in the priorities, and they weren't getting top dollar for their, which is a figurative speech, they weren't getting top consideration for their project versus some others. And we want to make sure that everybody feels like they're being heard, so we're going to figure figure that we're going to concentrate on how do we better reflect that. And I had the honor of serving on the Metropolitan Transportation Task Force for the Metro Council, just completed that, and we looked at a whole number of metro area projects. We've even had some state priorities as commission members of projects in the metro area, among other statewide significant projects in the state. And I think we're all aware that we want to focus and look more closely at how we're picking up the grassroots interrelationship with Metro. Similarly, in Lane County, so far Lane County has looked but not decided for certain upon their role as an area commission on transportation. We've worked with the Lane County commissioners. Mayor Torrey of the city of Eugene serves on LOAC, our Local Officials Advisory Commission, which is a meeting group of cities and counties that I attend on a monthly basis. Usually they meet down here, and we're searching for ways to complete our mosaic of making sure we have the appropriate grassroots from the entire state. Those are two areas we'll continue to work on. With that, I'm available to answer questions, but I also wanted to make sure that I came and was present this morning, that you knew of the involvement and oversight of the commission, and we've had the privilege also of already meeting personally with several of you, and we'll continue to be available as you need us during the session. So, Senator George, that completes at least my remarks, and I'll turn it back to Bruce.
Senator Dukes has a question.
Just a comment. You used a term that I thought was good, and it's one we hear so often, we don't always think about it in terms of the area transportation groups, grassroots. Maybe we should work a little harder to get people in there who are not recipients of the money. Because I'm not sure if anybody sits at the table, at least up at my end of the state, who doesn't get money. And I've struggled since it was created to figure out a way to make it work. And I've never been able to come up with it. And other than if you'd let us do it in the county as opposed to region. But I like the idea of getting some grassroots. And we probably talked at some point. I remember the old STIP hearings, and I loved them. Real people showed up at those things and told you what they thought. And now it seems like every time you hold one anymore, I'm here, because we're here most of the time. But if there's any way to work real people, the ones who actually drive the roads as opposed to the people who get paid to decide how they should be driven.
Chair George and Senator Dukes, thank you for that comment. Grassroots really is important to us, and there's sort of a philosophy that I think accompanies that as well. Our society gets so complex as time moves forward, and unfortunately many of our citizens, if you ask them how are they funding their transportation system or what's happening, their answer is that they don't know. And yet, unfortunately, as we look towards how do we handle cost of living increases or the many needs that the cities and counties and state have for now our bridge crisis, we need to have an informed voting electorate, too. They need to understand. So the more we can encourage them to be a part of the process, honestly, the better off I think we are.
And it's gone the other way in my part of the state, and I'd like to get back to that. For example, I had a town hall meeting Saturday in Seaside. We'll talk later. I am off the package now, the transportation package, if it only relates to bridges for the state. You have any? Bruce may have some idea what I had to drive through getting from Seaside down to Rockaway Beach. And it's nothing new. I should tell you that on the turnaround, somebody dumped fish. And this only happens on the coast. Representative Krieger will understand. You can probably even guess what happened. Somebody dumped fish. I assume a truck must have gone over. There was just a police car with flashing lights on it, blocking that second lane. See, it's a good thing we did it two lane. The state didn't want to do two lane, blocking that one lane. And you wondered what's going on, and no other cars or anything, just a horde of seagulls cleaning up the mess. the problems that we will continue to have in Seaside until we get the local people to listen to them are the sort of things that I think we're getting because we don't have that grassroots involvement.
Well, thank you, and I honestly can say we probably never considered in the turnaround design that we'd have fish down there spilled on it.
Did you ever think of
that? I think a wider loop next time.
No, as long as we get the two lanes. They didn't want to do two lanes. Right. We got two lanes. Would have been shut down if we hadn't had it.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A few years back when I was in a different role as county commissioner, there was one particular spot between the Linden Farms chicken processing plant and where they would take the chicken debris that was kind of based in water. It would splash out as the trucks went around one particular corner and kind of end in the same guy's yard every day. And it was worse than fish. But so don't feel that you're exclusive. the one comment I'd like to make, and that relating to the metro area, clearly one of the reasons why the metro area has been so successful over the last several decades, and getting the federal support that we've got, which has just been incredible and massive, and has allowed us to do some pretty major things, has been the unity of the metro area in terms of speaking with one voice. And certainly increased grassroots input and support is a good thing. I wouldn't discourage that. But anything that would tend to break that unity or allowing the region to speak with one voice, I think we need to be very aware of and very cognizant of. And I'm sure you're being very, very careful in terms of how this different work, different way of improvement in terms of getting that grassroots happens. But that regional unity is so incredibly important that I just had to mention.
Yeah. Chair George and Representative Hansen, I certainly agree with you. It's not only has it been successful for us as a state because of the unity Metro has had, but it's something we need to be mindful of if we do any different changes. I don't think we're going to do any major changes. I'm not sure we're going to do any changes. The as I see the persons, stakeholders, cities or counties that are coming forward with any even discussion of the complaints, they're sort of the fringe area, growth areas that see that they also are suffering from the same growth and the lack of transportation dollars. They know that I-5 north towards Vancouver has got to be taken care of. They know the bottleneck that's from I-5 around 205. They know the bottlenecks we've got going different directions, and I think our goal is to figure out how we can bring in citizens and some business people into the discussion group too, so it isn't just elected officials. But that there isn't anything wrong really with just elected officials. We don't have any major problems, but we are mindful. We'd like to broaden the scope of the participants somewhat. We don't know exactly how yet.
We need to go to Senator Morris, then back to Senator Carter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It occurs to me that at the outset of this hearing that it probably would be wise, I'm not sure necessary, but at least wise to make known a potential conflict of interest in, by virtue of my previous employment and ownership in Morse Brothers and our subsequent sale to MDU Resources and its family of companies that serve a major part of the state with construction materials and services, and my ongoing ownership indirectly through these companies. I guess technically I would have a conflict of interest. I want to make that known. I don't think it will affect my judgment in any way, but I would like that known at least for the record.
Because I do. Okay.
I was just thinking, I have the privilege of approving all the contracts, so I will note, Chair George and Senator Morse, we will not reflect that either way. I appreciate it.
No penalties.
No, there'll be no penalties.
Okay. But it did occur to me that maybe I should make that known. Thank you.
Senator Carter?
I just want to say to Representative Hansen and also to the chairman that the one thing that we do in the metro area is that I have now chaired two task forces for issues regarding TriMet that affected the state as well. And so I think you can do grassroots without messing up the formula. I agree with you in terms of the regional approach, but I think the more you have people engaged in, back to Joan's point, engaged in some of the issues that reflect them locally. And I think that local people who are in charge can do a good job. A good, for instance, is that we had a problem on the highway where it was just horrible, hadn't been kept up. And our college campus over in Northeast Portland was just dismayed by it. I got in a phone call to the transportation department. It was done. So I think having that local flavor in that way would not mess up the formula. And I want to strongly encourage that grassroots involvement in that way. And I think as long as at the local level it affects something, I don't think it really will mess up the formula in that way.
Well, Chair George and Senator Carter, I appreciate those comments. And I think if we do anything at all, I'm certain we'll make sure we get back with you and Representative Hansen. We certainly don't want to do anything to upset what's been a very successful apple cart. And I have the privilege, too, of serving in a new committee that Mayor Katz is creating. We haven't had a meeting yet, but I'm going to have some more opportunities, too, to at least discuss how our feedback comes. And we've had great working relationships so far, and I anticipate those will continue.
We thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you. We appreciate our opportunity, and I'm available, as are other commission members. I'm sure our staff won't get out of hand. If they do, you let us know.
Thank you. Again, Chair and committee members, this just is an example of how fortunate I, in my position in the department, I think Oregon is, in having Steve as the chair and a real talented group of folks who do work very, very hard. So I want to publicly acknowledge their efforts and work. I'll make the rest of my overview very quick. On page 14 and 15 of your notebooks, you have the 2001-2003 organizational chart, and then what's proposed on page 15 for the next biennium. And I'll just very quickly in a moment go through the various divisions' primary responsibilities. But I think, as you heard, it's important to note that this budget is down about 91 positions, or 41 less full-time equivalent positions than last biennium's, the current biennium we're in's allocation of employees. Real quickly, I just wanted to, starting on page 16, just give you the flavor and the overview of the various divisions and some of the things you're going to hear and why you need to think about these areas. The first division is the Highway Division, as I mentioned, headed by John Rosenberger. And this is the division that is responsible for the maintenance, preservation, and modernization of all of the state roads. And that's 7,500 miles of roadways, from two-lane gravel roadways in Central Oregon to multi-lane freeways. This is the group that does provide emergency repair to roads damaged from natural disasters and floods and earthquakes and slides. It does conduct the bridge inspections, repairs, and upgrades and safety improvements to the more than 2,680 state bridges. The Highway Division also delivers approximately $400 million worth of highway projects every year, and that is in an upward trend, and we're consciously doing that, as you heard. We also, in this division, manage a number of projects such as the Scenic Byway Program, the Bicycle and Pedestrian Program, the Salmon and Watershed Programs that Senator Dukes asked about, and Environmental Services. And again, using that 19 jobs per $1 million of transportation investment and contractor construction, and for 2003, that equates to just over 7,000 jobs that are sustained as a result of that investment on an annual basis in transportation projects. And I think John and his staff are doing some really great things to move our projects along more quickly, and I encourage you to listen to some of the things that they're doing there to get to some of the innovative things that allow us to move them out more quickly. The next major division is Driver Motor Vehicle Services, with Lorna Youngs as the administrator, and this is where we do test driver skills. We monitor their behavior, and we sanction drivers who don't follow the law. We title and register vehicles. We license and regulate vehicle-related businesses and investigate consumer complaints. And one that we don't think about a lot, this is the organization that collects a lot of revenue for us in the state. And I think Lorna and her staff have really been helping us meet our safety goals in terms of making sure that drivers are safe, and she's doing some innovative things with her staff to deal with impaired drivers and help us, again, make sure that the people driving out there are safe. The Motor Carrier Division next, headed by Greg Del Ponte, registers commercial vehicles, and those are trucks and buses, collects highway use taxes from those heavy vehicles,
and that equates to about 35.5% of the overall state monies collected. They issue overdimension permits, and they do enforce commercial vehicle size and weight laws. And I think you're going to find out from the presentation that Greg and his staff are leaders in the use of intelligent transportation systems, in other words, technology to help trucks get through our state more quickly and easily, and also a leader in e-government. And you'd be surprised to learn some of the things I think that we now are available on the web that truckers no longer have to come into our offices to actually get. Transportation Development, headed by Craig Greenleaf. This is the organization that guides and supports the short-term and long-term planning for Oregon's transportation system. They provide the policy, economic, and financial analysis that we and the commission and you rely upon, and they collect and analyze reports that are required by the federal government. This is our research arm, and you'll find out that we rely very heavily on the data and information provided by Craig's staff to make the best investment decisions possible to ensure that safety or congestion or those kind of things are addressed in the most efficient and effective way. Public transit, Martin Loring, administrator, we do not provide any direct service ourselves, but we provide grant assistance to local and regional governments and nonprofit organizations for transportation services. This group also provides financial and technical help to small cities and the smaller rural transit districts, and then to senior and disabled transportation service providers. It does create and support inner-city passenger transit service that connect to other modes such as air, bus, and rail. And I think you'll be interested in some of the things that they're trying to do to provide transportation services for Oregonians who can't or choose not to drive. And there's a number of folks, and the percentage is about the same in the rural area, the urban area, of folks who just cannot drive or for one reason or another. Very important service. The rail division, headed by Claudia Howells, is the group that regulates highway and rail grade crossing safety. They manage the grade crossing improvement projects where we put in signals and crossing gates. They manage the passenger rail operations and coordinate Oregon's partnership with the state of Washington and California and the Pacific Northwest high-speed rail corridor. And then they manage and monitor the safety of freight and passenger rail improvement projects. And I think, as was mentioned, Claudia and her staff are the ones that are on point to try to make the commuter rail in Washington County a reality. And that's another thing that we're watching very carefully and hope is a success. Transportation safety, I saw Troy Costales in the room behind me here. We have a great record in Oregon, and it's because we work with our partners, the Oregon State Police, local law enforcement, to organize, plan, and conduct statewide transportation safety programs. The major efforts that I think we talked about briefly include seatbelt safety, intoxicated drivers, speeding, young drivers, and motorcycle safety. My son was one who had the graduated driver's license and worked very well. Pleased that Oregon has those requirements. And we award more than 550 grants and contracts to partners and other service providers each year. And as noted previously, Oregon has enjoyed the least annual traffic fatalities since the 1950s. And that's a remarkable statistics. Troy and his staff, I got to tell you, are committed and passionate folks, believe in what they do, and I think you'll find his presentation very interested. Mike Marsh, also in the room, I think you all know Mike, is the head of our central services. This is the group that does provide the core administrative services to the agency, including financial services, human resources, purchasing, fleet, and information services, and provides information to you about ODOT programs, and provide his staff provide information to the public. And frankly, without Mike's folks, we cannot accomplish our goals or get our programs done. And you'll enjoy listening to Mike. I couldn't go without talking about some of the challenges, so I'm going to go to page 18 right now. Where some of the budgetary issues I think are important, I believe Ms. Jordan touched on these. Inflation is the one. Just if you look at the period between 1990 and 2000, that decade, what cost a dollar in 1990 cost $1.32 today.
And so what that means is that every year our buying power is reduced about $17.2 million, or about 0.7 cents of a gallon of gasoline tax is what we lose to inflation. The other interesting thing you probably don't think about is the fuel efficiency of the fleet. In 1970, the average car got about 11 miles to the gallon. They're now approaching 20 miles to the gallon. That combined with inflation means that if you look in real dollars, in 1970, drivers paid about 2.6 cents per gallon, excuse me, per mile to drive on the state's roads. Today they pay 1.3 cents. So you can see that inflation and the fuel efficiency has actually reduced down the amount of revenue by half in terms of what people are paying. And then the other thing, the other challenge we've got to remember is Oregon is expected to grow. And if you look at the statistics, we're in a downturn now, but the projections show that nearly a million more people in the next 20 years coming to Oregon, which equals more growth, more cars, more traffic, congestion, and wear and tear on our roadways. The other one which you heard about is our system is getting old. Much of it was built in the 60s. And just like an aging home, it requires more maintenance and preservation than it did before. I won't get into bridges, but I think you know a lot about the bridges now that we've discovered that a design we used along with much more traffic volume than was ever planned is causing bridges to deteriorate to a level that we actually have to reduce the carrying capacity of those. And in fact, what we're finding out is once they get about 50 years old, this defect shows up and the degradation goes very, very quickly. If we had to take care of all of the crack bridge problems, both on the state, the city, and the county system, we'd need almost $5 billion. We have identified and recommended to our commission and to a number of you that we ought to focus on the first $1.6 billion worth of critical state, city, and county bridges that keep the freight moving in Oregon, deal with lifeline routes. And this will be clearly an issue that we'll be talking about some more through the rest of the session. If you look at this budget, it about doubles the amount of money we've been spending on bridges from where we are in past biennia, that's as a result of this problem and also direction from our commission. In conclusion, let me say for you that, simply put, transportation does affect everyone, whether working or going to school, delivering products or vacationing, we all depend on a safe, efficient, and reliable transportation system. And the budget that you'll be hearing about will allow us to continue to promote and partner with our transportation safety efforts, which will in turn save lives and reduce the cost due to injuries on Oregon's roads and rails. It will also provide mobility to Oregonians and give them options to connect to employment, schools, health care, family, and friends in terms of other modes. It will protect financial ownership in vehicles. It will simplify compliance by reducing unnecessary regulation for the commercial trucking industry, and you look forward to some of the things we're doing there. This budget will also provide direction and information for decision-making on the management and improvement of the Oregon's transportation system. It will provide a sound highway system that allows Oregon's economy and industries, including agriculture, timber, tourism, and technology, to prosper. And it will allow us to pursue innovative finance methods, and such as some of the tools that the federal government has allowed us to use, but really we're just starting to now take advantage of. Those public-private partnerships that I think you've heard about, example is the extension of light rail from Gateway to the airport. We want to see if we can do that for other types of projects in Oregon. Use of innovative contract, and Senator Carter, we will give you some examples of those. And with that, I think I believe that we're on the right track. As our chair said, we still have work to do, but we're making great strides and doing things better. And I hope this overview has helped give you a basic understanding of the businesses we know as the Oregon Department of Transportation will provide a foundation for the upcoming presentations that you're going to hear. I look forward to the next few days, and I guess a couple weeks with you and the committee, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have at this time. Otherwise, we've been taking good notes, and we'll make sure that the questions you've asked are covered in the division presentations.
Just a comment at this point. Board of Maritime Pilots.
Thank you.
And I'm not sure who's going to be making that presentation when we get to it, but make sure they understand that there will be questions on affirmative action. And I'd like to see a report from the last 3 or 4 years for their outreach and what they've done, and if it's been successful, where they're going from here, and if it's been unsuccessful, where they're going from here. This is an ancient issue with this little agency, and it's time to revisit it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, thank you. I did gloss over that because they are actually part of our department's budget, and I'm actually an ex officio member of the Board of Maritime Pilots. And
I'm asking you to take a larger role in that because I'm sitting here thinking of the legislators who were involved when we visited this last, and I suspect that there are people sitting in this panel who have never heard of some of them.
Right.
It's been that long.
And Ms. Susan Johnson will be the person presenting that. We'll make sure that we proactively discuss that issue, and I know that was an issue for the legislature in past sessions.
Senator Carter?
I still have battle scars.
Mm-hmm. Well, you get a few more. Okay?
That's it. Any further questions?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
Mike,
did you have this? No. Mr. Chair, we finished the overviews for today. If you want, Troy Costales is in the audience, and we can move ahead with transportation safety.
Okay.
And get started on that. We've got another 30 minutes or so.
Let's do it.
You can, okay.
All right. Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Ways and Means Subcommittee. My name is Troy Costales. I am manager of the Transportation Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. And I'm here this morning to walk you through an overview and where we are heading as far as safety goes in the state, as well as with the safety division of ODOT.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, he will be kind of going through, starting at page 30.
That's correct. Thank you. The Transportation Safety Division's mission is quite simple, but also very daunting, and that is to reduce the number of lives lost on the transportation system in Oregon and reduce the number of injuries caused by traffic crashes all around the state. We attempt to do our work looking at it from what is called the four E's: the engineering, the education, the enforcement, and from the emergency medical point of view. We found, not only in this state, but all across the United States, that when we approach problems and try to address the needs by looking at it from the four E's, that's when you have the most impact. As was mentioned in the department overview, and your interest in local involvement and local contact, that's how the safety program works in this state. We have over 50 local traffic safety committees that have been put in place by county commissions or city councils, and we have hundreds of neighborhood associations or parent-teacher associations or local school advisory committees, other types of groups that have neighborhood traffic or safety on their agenda, and we have a system that allows them to work their way forward and come to us, and we have grant programs and training programs and equipment programs that they can get a hold of some of the things that they've identified as a need at their local level. We also deal with three governor-appointed advisory committees, one of which is in the Department of Transportation. That's the Oregon Transportation Safety Committee. We also have two other governor-appointed advisory committees that are in the governor's office, one governor advisory committee on motorcycle safety, and a second, the governor's advisory committee on DUII. And the safety division staffs and works with all three of those governor-appointed committees in their areas of interest in order to have a difference in the state.
Troy, before you leave that, could you provide for us our costs relative to each one of those groups of those organizations?
Mr. Chairman, I can't provide that to you, but I would also let you know that it's probably less than $5,000. They are all volunteers.
That's the question I have.
And we reimburse them meals, if there is such, and miles, which most of them choose not to submit an expense for. So it's very inexpensive. Would you like a formal report? Is that okay? Thank you.
Chair Senator Morris and then Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does your division also include responsibility for construction safety, highway safety of construction workers?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Morris, indirectly, we have responsibility for the Give Them a Break advocacy program, the media message, and we also are responsible for the contract with the Oregon State Police to do the enforcement in the work zones. But the actual construction work and the requirements of how to do traffic management and the planning of the projects resides within the Highway Division.
Having been an employer, we had fatalities, we had extremely serious injuries, and it's an area that gives me a lot of concern.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to learn more about what the department is doing as we go along, if it isn't specifically in your division, with respect to worker safety on the highway. It's drivers of vehicles just don't get it.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Morris, I could also add that in Oregon, the number of fatalities in work zones has declined dramatically. Just a few years ago, we were at 21. In the past few years, we have been at 6 and 5. As we've dropped, the United States numbers have actually gone up by one-third. And given the amount of work that we're expecting with OTIA and if there's any other revenue towards construction out of this particular session, the focus on getting to the driver, because majority of the people that are killed or injured in work zone areas, it's not construction staff, it's actually the driver and the passenger, because they're getting in situations that the roadway is different and not handling it correctly.
Representative Krieger.
Okay, it's kind of funny that you were talking about that, because Saturday morning I had breakfast with a constituent in Brookings, and he was talking about the night before, the rain, the wind had blown, there was a tree down on 101, and they're out with flashlights trying to slow these people down. They got lights flashing. He says they paid no attention. They were going in the wrong lane. He says 60 miles an hour passed, just as if we didn't exist. He says some of these idiots, he said, shouldn't even have a driver's license. And the longer he talked, the madder he got talking to us. He says, calm down, calm down. There it is. You know, I'm aware of what you're talking about. Just real briefly, talking about the OSP and the numbers we have, and public safety, DUIs, a lot of places you see where DUIs, numbers of arrests going down. But if you cut your state police in half, sheriff's offices are about 80%, some of the cities are down, you don't have exposure time out there to catch them. Well, that doesn't mean that people are no longer drinking and driving. It's that you're not in a position to make the contact. So you know, there is some statistics here about deaths, percentage of deaths, alcohol related, that type of thing, but maybe that would even be lower had we had the people out there. So that's kind of like Senator Dukes will relate to the fact, well, they haven't caught as many fish out there, so there aren't as many. Well, if they don't have a season to catch them, of course the numbers are going to go down. You know, it just drives me nuts when they do that, when they pull that one on you. There's no fish left, so the numbers are down. Same thing here.
Sorry, two questions. Do you believe that the doing a lot of work at night is actually helping? It was reminded me when Representative Krieger made that statement. I've noticed people slow down more because, first of all, the lights are so magnificent, I guess is the way to describe it, when you're approaching a major construction site that's being done at night. And I've noticed people slow down, much greater level of slowing down than they do what I would observe in the daytime. Do you think there's any relationship there?
Mr. Chairman, not looked specifically at that. I don't have that with me to okay. be able to answer that question. I do know with the amount of construction that's going on in the state, there's no way to just do it at night. But we can look at some of the information in relationship to the fatalities or injuries if there is a difference between night versus daytime.
And do we transfer dollars to state police for the patrols relative to construction?
Mr. Chairman, yes. We have about $1,050,000 approximately comes from the safety division to the patrol division of OSP, specifically earmarked for work zone patrol. That's in the special payments category of the Safety Division budget.
Not what I was going to ask, but let me ask it as a follow-up. Is that federal money?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dukes, yes, it is. It's something that Federal Highway Administration has identified and classified for us to do specific to work zones where there are federal dollars being spent.
The work zone decreases. We did a lot of things to try to get at it. Do we know which of those were most effective? I mean, we did the Give Them a Break campaign. We increased the dollar amount of fines for not stopping and things like that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, I believe it's a combination of not only the things that you point out, the double fine in work zones, which then presents an extra set of signing, but I think not in construction zones are not just Highway Division or ODOTs. We're talking about county construction zones, city, and public utility as well. We went through a tremendous amount of outreach to judges in relationship to how they treat citations that come forward in work zones and what severity we're talking about. We also did outreach to cities, counties, and public utilities in relationship to their signing. If the sign's up, someone should be there. If you don't have workers ahead and then not have anybody there, and there's been a lot of reduction of that offense by those in charge of the work zones. We've done more in the education media campaign around the Give Them a Break, and the brand new one this year is Slow Down, My Mommy or My Daddy Works There in billboards. And actual photos of children and of folks that work in the work zones in the certain areas, outreach to the companies, as Senator pointed out, there's a lot of private firms involved in construction. It's making sure as many of those E's, of the four E's that we can put into play, the more that we can put those together, the better off we are.
Have we done any changes in signage of program projects that well, we're not doing anything? I mean, I always figured that one of the reasons people didn't take it all so seriously is that there are projects out there that seem to go on forever, and there will be long periods of time when we're not doing anything, and yet we still have them signed as a slower speed limit, and the public doesn't seem to see any good reason to do that, and I think they just get conditioned that the signs don't necessarily mean that there are people there, and I thought we did something about that.
Chairman and Senator Dukes, two types of things that the signs try to alert the drivers to, and that is workers that are there and involved, and then the other is that it's a construction zone, and that's dealing with very often a roadway pattern that changes, lanes shift, or there's no shoulder, or there's equipment in the area. It's the roadway environment itself is different to the driver, and some of the confusion is around partly what you describe, and that is the area is different. So there's says road construction, but there's nobody there. But the reason why it says road construction is because of the lane shifts or the roadway environment next to the road is there's equipment or barriers or something there that's a little bit different.
People are still cited for going through there at a normal speed?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dukes, law enforcement could cite work zone related in the area, but part of what the officer would have to make sure they write up is what was the conditions that was that caused the potential harm or the danger in the area when they were to move forward to the court.
Senator Morris.
Mr. Chairman, this would be a question, I guess, to LFO. To echo Representative Krieger's concern about the Oregon State Police and their lack of presence on our highways and the defunding that's occurred within that agency, I have a real grave concern about the dwindling resources and the increasing vehicle miles. My question would be if it was the pleasure of this subcommittee to find a way to allocate ODOT funds to transfer funds to OSP for patrol safety functions. Is that within the purview of this committee?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, it's The only money that could be transferred is federal money, and I believe that it's being transferred in the transportation safety area. The highway fund is dedicated, constitutionally dedicated to highway purposes and cannot be used for state patrol activities. That was decided by the voters, I don't know how many years ago, but there was an initiative that went to the voters asking if parks and state police should continue to be funded by the highway fund, and our citizens said no. They just wanted that those gas tax, fuel tax, license fee revenues to go to construction. So there isn't a source there other than the federal revenues in that federal program.
Oh, of course. Is that a constitutional?
Yes.
That's constitutional, sure, yeah.
So it would require some kind of
we'd have to
go resolution
to refer to the voters.
To refer that.
Yeah.
You've been there, done that.
They turned it down a bit.
Yeah, it was pretty overwhelming.
And not that long ago on the,
yeah,
on the state
right
police.
It was just a few sessions ago.
Mm-hmm. There. Hang on one second.
Representative
Krieger.
Maybe somewhere has a history of who promoted that change in 79. I think that needs to be on the record. Where the state police were no longer funded because...
Yeah, that's what I thought. It was Attorney General that initiated that based upon the Constitution issue.
It was, but there was motivation from a couple of groups to see that he looked into it to see if that was legally being. Mm-hmm. I believe it was the construction industry and the truckers. Go check.
I heard something that...
That was a good idea at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, don't quote me, but I heard something that affected. It was moved because they wanted more money for construction. They didn't think it was a proper use. And it wasn't. It was. They were right. Constitutionally, they were right.
But just to follow up,
certainly.
I did a ride-along with one of our local patrolmen, OSP, and the speeds at which people are traveling now and the diminished resources that are available, they can see the bump in speed. It's very, very noticeable. And we had no trouble. I mean, he wrote up a ton of tickets. But I think we have a serious issue here. It's a serious policy issue,
mm-hmm.
not a fiscal issue, I suppose, in this committee, but a serious policy issue in this state of whether we're going to allow people to travel in ways that are not safe.
Just for a little background this morning, in fact, I actually was going to go testify on the speed bill this morning, and based upon the fact that driving to Cottage Grove over the weekend, I was absolutely shocked. I mean, I thought 75 would, you know, about be where it was. Oh, but we're beyond 75 now.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about you.
80.
Yeah, I could hardly catch those guys that were going 80. But anyway, it was amazing. But Troy, when I take off the hat here this afternoon, I put on the public safety subcommittee's hat, and I've been sitting here thinking about this. That's the reason I asked the question: do we transfer money to state police, and is there any possibility of additional transfers? Because it is a road safety issue. Whether or not there's adequate patrol out there. And it's every time I'm sitting in that committee, I'm thinking about this issue and was kind of waiting for you to walk in here.
Mr. Chairman, if I can answer your question directly in relationship to the funds towards enforcement. In the Safety Division budget, there's $2,277,000 scheduled next biennium to go towards state police. $1 million of that is towards the work zone specific, and $1.2 million then is towards the areas of speed, safety belt, DUI in particular. And when we give those grants to state police, typically it is going to be for overtime. And the reason why it's an overtime is because then we have somebody that's dedicated to that issue or to that item working for safety and is not eligible to be called off to a domestic violence or a road assist or something like that. And one of the things that we've had in the past, in 1989, the Inspector General for USDOT came in and wanted to look at how safety funds were being used by OSP, funding straight time, and the fact that any time one of those officers is pulled off to do something else, they have to note it on their time card. because it's not eligible for safety funds. So the resolution to that was to try and do overtime so we've got dedicated time, dedicated patrol. There's also equivalent, if not more, that goes towards the police departments for the cities and to the sheriff's office in the counties. And one of the things that we've done as far as administratively to make things work better for us and for the police departments and the sheriff's office is we work with their state association, the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police and the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, where they actually are overseeing all of the sub-grants to their connected agencies, which helps us manage one big grant with a quarterly report of what's going on so we do our part in overseeing the grant, but also helps them because there's the perception when you're dealing with a state agency, well, you've got all this paperwork you've got to do. And we've gotten great response that way. Our number of the police departments and sheriff's offices involved in our programs has increased dramatically the last 3 years. So there's a lot of enforcement money going out from what resources we have. A lot of it does go out towards enforcement.
Director, and maybe Mike, and for you. But when you think about $700 million of federal dollars, and a lot of those dollars are referred to as flexible, and I'm just, my thought has always been, how flexible are they? And so if you guys could look into that, because I, obviously there's a real interest even in this committee. When you go to public safety in the afternoon, I guarantee you it's a major issue. But because everyone always comes back to the idea of this VMT number being up so significantly. You know, I remember the 18% population growth, but a 60% increase in VMT during the same period of time. That was something ODOT had given us a few years ago. And it, you know, it was just, we're recognizing that, that not only we're growing beyond population when it comes to vehicle miles traveled. And, of course, the other issue is that, you know, you have the person who is not in total control of their automobile, who is not disciplined when they approach a work site or the speed that they're traveling on a highway.
So, Chair, why did you point to me at that point?
I knew I was referring to your concern.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, if I take you to page 32.
A couple comments. I'm also serving in the afternoon on the Public Safety Committee. And one of the things certainly the whole state police budget is a very, very emotional issue because of the very dramatic cuts. But I don't think I have a handle yet in terms of the overall dynamics of what the problem is. For example, when we look at the fatalities per 100 million miles driven, mm-hmm. from 85 to 201, they've decreased dramatically. And yet this is also at the same time that we've chronically battled underfunding with the state police. So I don't know if you could draw a correlation that the state police, how we fund the state police, how directly that relates to the overall gains that we're making. I'm wondering if there are other things there that are making a lot bigger difference. One, maybe how we funded how local governments are funded and what their enforcement activities of whether very specifically the grants to get people to use seat belts, whether that's made a bigger difference. The alcohol-related fatalities, again, have dropped pretty dramatically in the 10-year period, again at a time that we've decreased state police resources. Is that the, in a sense, that's maybe more because of a real cultural shift in terms of how society looks at drinking and driving. But I don't know if the other one that I've got a lot of concern with is in terms of the overtime grants for those activities. And if the only reason we're funding overtime is just to avoid some accounting problems, I'd a lot rather see the money going to somebody funding people at straight time, which increases the number of people that we can bring back from layoff compared to bringing people, having the people that are currently working, just having them working more overtime on top of the hours that I think we could get more bang for the buck if we could get around that accounting issue either through some new techniques of either averaging or maybe having them note on their time cards
So we get more bodies. Overtime's an expensive way to hire mm-hmm. people. Although certainly I think in terms of the safety belt use, the local grants that went to the city of Portland and Multnomah County were both incredibly effective in terms of increasing belt usage.
Let me ask the question then. Is that a possible idea, and that is to add back patrol officers that are dedicated to certain specific programs, and they could, you know, maybe one a region or something like that that could in fact do that. Will that qualify under the federal criterion?
Mr. Chairman, that and Representative Hansen, that is a possibility. The responsibility would fall on state police in order to identify in their budget how they are spending the money, that they would be shifting it from overtime to straight time, and then what potentially would that add up to an FTE, and then in turn their ability to, on the time cards, be able to differentiate when they're on highway safety work versus non-highway safety work. Said there has been an audit about 10 years ago that we've got to make sure we adhere to the findings on that, because we don't want to go back through and then all of a sudden owe back the federal government funds because highway safety money was used for non-highway safety work. But we leave it up to the receiving agency to identify that.
Senator Carter.
If you look at the 1985 phone numbers, I hate to keep talking about battle scars because I date myself when it happens.
Fatalities.
But if you would look on the safety belt.
Okay.
Safety belt use. If you, page 33, mm-hmm. if you were to look at the strong education component with us doing bikers, because they were considered part of that you know, mobility piece of transportation, and the wonderful education job, very strong. Were you back? Were you there in 85?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Cardin, I came on board in 1987.
Okay. but I'm sure you can recall the strong education components that was there. I tell you that the data was just amazing, because to go from 31% to 88%, it was not enforcement, because, I mean, it was a combination mm-hmm. of all of the above, but strong education, all on television, all on radio, in our schools, mm-hmm. and everything else is what did it. I mean, it just really was a banged-up job, and again, that regional approach to dealing with those kind of issues did it. And so I'm saying that in terms of enforcement, police, education, all of that, it was a combination of it that did it. And I agree with you. We certainly need to get back to the point where we have policing as efficient from the state level as we do from local level. I certainly agree with that.
Could we refer to it from now on as a non-banged up job, though?
That's right, non-banged up
safety.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to encourage us to pay attention to what Troy is telling us and to be careful as we go along this. And as we want to do to increase the numbers of state police, I think we need to do it in a more straightforward method. I mean, we already have so many hours of state police, and which translates to so many FTE that we're paying for to inspect trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And we have so many that we're paying for to, you know, to do safety belts and so much. And because the money comes in pockets. And I think when the decision came down from the Attorney General's office on what we could and couldn't pay for, we actually still do some of the rest areas. But it's only the ones with paved roads, if I remember correctly, through it. So we couldn't do most of them, but we could do some. But we fragmented those folks off so much that when we think of putting state police on the road, we think of being able to respond to all kinds of stuff. And we're tying these people up to where they can respond to do a safety inspection on a semi, or they can respond if you don't have your seatbelt on, and those sorts of things. And I would hate to lose the federal money that allows us to do that, mm-hmm. because we need them out there. But I'd also be hesitant to go down the road that says we're going to have more of them out there, leading us to think we did some good thing for state police, when somehow we've managed to move the dollars around so that they're out doing more truck inspections, and their money is so tied that if there's a speeder going by, they can't stop them anyway. And so I think that
The flexible money, Mr. Chair, is flexible for roads and bridges. It isn't flexible for a lot of other things. And so I'm just, it's sometimes we do what we think looks good, and it doesn't actually give us where we're trying to get to, and this might be one of those.
Senator Morris?
Where could we get the information with respect to the restrictions that the federal dollars have? Is it possible to, in fact, change from the overtime reimbursements to straight time and add, allow OSP to add more patrol, focused on highway patrol safety? Is that possible within the federal regulations?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Morris, it is possible for the funds to be dedicated towards straight time, but it's going to require the individual officer tracking their time to make sure that it's relating back to the funding bucket that it comes from. Within the safety division, for instance, within the safety division, I have 12 different federal accounts that I have to deal with. And it's set by Congress to say, this is money for safety belts, this is money for DUI, this is money for, and they categorize it. When we allow grants and we have grants towards enforcement for city, county, and for state, we put the amount of money we have available out there for those grants, and in turn the agencies respond back and indicate how they're going to spend it. The easiest way, to highlight for state police for a second, the easiest way for them to say we're going to have this officer doing this time on the DUI money is if that officer's on overtime, because that officer cannot be pulled off and go do anything else. And so it's able to get 3 or 4 hours of dedicated time to saturate at a certain moment to do DUI patrol when there's a problem relating to drinking and driving or drugs and driving. Can OSP choose to receive that money in straight time? Yes. There's going to have to be some specific tracking that they're going to have to do on their end. And it is with the Public Safety Subcommittee. That's the place to ask that particular question, because they're getting money not only from safety but from a lot of other people too.
Thinking of some little handheld Palm Pilot like thing, you can probably track that. Representative Frieder?
Mr. Chair, we've been doing that. I did it for 30 years. I mean, I got commercial fish, game, traffic, the Marine Board, criminals, arson, you name it. You may have 6 or 7 entries on your daily report. Mm-hmm. They did that because we had to be able to report back to the agencies of how many hours they were getting for grants, or like you're saying, all this money that's been divvied up. So that's been an ongoing thing forever.
Okay. Now we can stop right now.
I do have to leave.
All right. We do. We thank you very much. I guess we'll see you tomorrow.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
And with that, we will close the agency overview and the public hearing. And with the Catholic Gavel, we'll be adjourned.